Welcome to the Coffee House. Welcome to Coffee Law. I would just like to explain the meaning and purpose of Coffee Law and how it's relevant to our study and development. The key point simply is this: many of the largest financial markets in the world all began in coffee shops and coffee houses in the 1600s in the city of London, and then expanded elsewhere to many of the other major cities across the world. So what we're looking at is coffee law and coffee houses and the historical development and growth of this as an academic professional and as a social institution. We'll look at origin, history, social relevance and importance, manners, coffee house manners were very important, penny universities and the decline of the coffee house and the replace by that with the tea house. Drinking of coffee began in Turkey, initially called kaufi, C-A-U-P-H-E. This was originally referred to in the English writings by Sir Henry Blount in 1634. A certain Daniel Edwards had an employee, Pasqua Rosi, who used to serve coffee to guests in the city of London in the 1640s and the 1650s. Pasqua Rosi then opened the first shack or stack. It was basically just a table with a cover, an awning, to serve coffee in 1652. This was in St. Michael's Alley, Cornhill, just beside the Bank of England. And you can still see the plaque, which is on the wall outside the Jamaica Coffee House. This was very popular and became very highly used, attracted a large number of customers. Very quickly, by 1663, there was 82 coffee houses in the city of London, and then by the 1700s, middle of the 1700s, there was over 3,000 of them. Everybody used coffee shops, everybody used coffee houses, and I'll show you some maps of the old city of London. This wasn't actually the first coffee shop in London. The first coffee house in England was actually set up slightly earlier in Oxford by Jacob in 1650. That's on the High Street in Oxford. It's now the site of the Grand Cafe. It's still there, it's very popular, and it's very attractive. It's an excellent place to visit and to have coffee and afternoon tea. Strictly speaking, though, it wasn't the oldest. The oldest coffee house, or the oldest continuing coffee shop, it was technically the oldest, but the oldest continuous running coffee shop was directly across the road in the High Street in Oxford. That's the Queen's Lane Coffee House. It was set up by Sir Jobson in 1654. So it's 4 years later, but it's been running in continuous operation ever since. And it's still open today. It's very popular, specifically with students from St. Edmund Hall and Magdalen College, Oxford. The coffee house very quickly expanded in growth and popularity. It became a significant public, social, and business institution. It was referred to as an important emancipatory and informative ritual. Coffee was referred to as a bitter Mohammedan gruel and an Epicurean and sensual form of art. Coffee was also said to be a miracle cure, with an important pamphlet on the virtue of coffee drink published in 1652, but later there was a women's petition against coffee in 1674. So they tried to sell coffee by having this important pamphlet which promoted the use of coffee, and we can see that here. This is the pamphlet which professed the health benefits and value, especially in terms of virility of drinking coffee. But what had also happened was ladies were eligible to attend, but they just, for social reasons, didn't want to go. And then they actually developed their own opposition to this. And there was a separate petition by women against the coffee shop and the coffee house because they didn't like the amount of time that men were spending in the coffee shops away from their families and away from them. Now, the key point is this. This was the beginning of the dawn of an age of sobriety, with coffee becoming the jet fuel of the Enlightenment. Now, the Enlightenment itself can either be considered to date from 1637, which was René Descartes' Discourse of Method, or the preferred date would be 1687, which was Sir Isaac Newton's Principia Mathematica, which lasts until around the beginning of the 1800s, 1804, which is the death of Immanuel Kant. the Age of Enlightenment is the beginning of this new study of mathematics and science, a new faith in maths and science and intelligence as we move away from earlier forms of religious and spiritual control. It was a very important part in larger intellectual evolution and development in Europe and across the world. And to a significant extent, it was actually supported and driven by the evolution and significance of these coffee shops and these coffee houses. A very important aspect of the coffee shop, the coffee house, were the coffee house manners. Everyone was equal inside the coffee house, and everyone was expected to behave with a degree of good manners, etiquette, and courtesy. The reference was that no man of any stature need give his place up to a finer man. And what that simply meant was this. Outside the coffee shop, you would have a lord and a laird, and you would have a carriage driver, or someone that would, a gun carrier, or someone that would polish boots. Inside the coffee shop, everyone's equal. Everyone sat together in long coffee tables, and everyone exchanged information, everyone exchanged discourse and conversation. Everyone was to be treated with complete equality and respect. We actually had the rules and orders for the, which established the etiquette in the coffee shop, in the coffee houses. This is again dated 1674. There was also certain rules of conduct. So it cost a penny to enter the coffee shop, and then you could stay as long as you wanted and drink as much coffee as you liked. But there was a fine. Anyone using bad language, there was a 12 penny fine. So it was 12 times the entrance fee was the fine. And if you get into a dispute, if you started a quarrel or a kind of aggressive disagreement, you had to buy the other gentleman's coffee. You had to pay for the other offendee's coffee as a penalty to support the rules of the system. Now, it was all governed by these manners, etiquette, and certain courtesy. The currency of the coffee shop was information. It was discourse. It was passing on current affairs and information with regard to the world that was happening at that time. Everyone inside the coffee shop was expected to exchange news and information, which was the common currency of the coffee shop. Remember, this was before social media, this was before formalized newspapers, this was before any form of other alternative communication method. People came together to find out what was happening and to discuss and exchange opinions on current affairs and current events. The common greeting was, "Your servant, sir, what news?" or "What news from Tripoli?" So you would sit down and you'd say, "Your servant, sir, what news from Tripoli?" That's how you began a conversation in the coffee shop. In Latin, and there was even coffee shops that only spoke Latin. If it was in Latin, you would sit down and say, "Quid novi?" What's new? This became a very important form of social media exchange and information dissemination, simply because there was no other sources of reliable information at that time. What also happened was the proprietors of the coffee shops then began to develop their own information provision systems. So they started pamphlets, which became newspapers. They also had runners who would run around the city and the country collecting information. They also used pigeons, homing pigeons, to get information from other cities, other towns, and from abroad. These coffee houses became the centre of information supply, the centre for information dissemination. They also became referred to as penny universities, the penny being the penny you spent to get into the coffee shop at the beginning. Because they were so useful in disseminating information, they were known as penny universities. Partly because of this, and partly because of the civility and equality with which everyone attended at that time. There was only certain subjects that were prohibited, including sacred things, which was religion, as well as you were expected not to criticise the state or scriptural documents such as the Bible. You had to treat religion with respect and not engage with discussion on that. Virtually everything else could be discussed and everything else would be debated. And the whole purpose was to engage in these extended forms of formal conversation with other gentlemen in the coffee shop. Now, one of the most important aspects was this. It was that many of the largest financial markets then emerged out of these coffee shops. Because what would happen is this. The coffee shops would attract certain types of merchants and clientele interested in certain types of business in certain areas. So they would then come together. So they would begin to form around certain coffee shops, would get a reputation for doing certain types of business. Those gentlemen would then have their own informal and then formal rules of engagement, which then became the rules or order, the basis for the markets themselves. And then they would leave the building and set up their own formal premises elsewhere. So just in terms of chronology, we had Jacob in the High Street in Oxford, so that was in 1650. Sir Jobson, that was Queen's Lane coffee shop, opposite in 1654. Pasqua Rosie brings the coffee house to London in 1652. But we've then also got Thomas Garraway's, became very popular very quickly, 1657. Jonathan Mills, 1680. This is the origin of the London Stock Exchange. All the gentlemen doing business, wanting to do trade around the world, would come to Jonathan's. They would do business, and then we have a whole series of progressions afterwards, which are all summarised in the paper that I provided on the system about how this emerges into the London Stock Exchange, which then becomes the fourth, at one point the second, now the fourth largest stock market in the world. Lloyd's of London, the largest insurance company in the world, at one point emerged from Edward Lloyd's coffee shop in 1686. And again, a lot of effort was made by Lloyd's specifically to develop information supply systems, as well as newspapers, as well as what becomes known as the Lloyd's List, as well as the use of auctions. All of this would be developed, all of this would take place in these coffee shops, these coffee houses, which would then emerge into becoming the largest marketplaces in the world. We also had, you'll see there, the British Virginia Coffee House, 1722. There was a large number of others, including, for example, the Virginia and Baltic. This will later become the Baltic Exchange. This is the largest shipping market in the world, with around 65% of all shipping business in the world conducted in London through the Baltic Exchange. It all, again, began in these early coffee shops, coffee houses in the City of London. I've just referred to some of the other coffee shops, coffee houses. There was the Jamaica, there was the Africa and Senegal, there was the Jerusalem and East India, the Virginia and Maryland, the Carolina and the Honduras. There was Will's Coffee House, Bank Coffee House, the Stock Exchange, the American in New England, and Lloyd's Subscription Coffee Shop. At its peak, there was over 3,000 of these coffee shops all around the City of London and then extending into wider London and all around the London area and then into other major cities in the UK and abroad. These are the two maps I was talking about, the various coffee house locations. A major part of the centre of the City of London just became coffee shops. It was just coffee shops, one next to the other, because this was the only place to do business, to conduct business, because the alternative was the tavern where you would then just engage in drinking all day. This is all just around the Bank of England. There's Lombard Street at the bottom there. This is another map. All of this were coffee shops and coffee houses. This is where Jonathan Mills used to be. There's a number of these plaques still on the walls around the City of London. There was actually a tour you used to be able to do with Dr. Matthew Green. I've done it a number of times, where you can actually walk around, see all the plaques, understand all the different bits, and he would tell you lots of stories about all of the events and how all of this evolved and developed over time. These are just some drawings and pictures from the coffee shops, from the coffee houses. They were very popular, they were very important, and they remain so for around 150 years. What led to the decline? Essentially, by the end of the 1700s, there was a number of overlapping factors. One of them simply was that the proprietors themselves became a little too aggressive. They tried to monopolise information, they tried to monopolise culture, and there was a big backlash against this by the proprietors of the coffee houses, the coffee shops. They didn't like this. So there was a reaction against this attempt to basically monopolise information and culture. We also, at the same time, had the evolution, the development of private clubs and private societies. In London, we still have, for example, the Oxford and Cambridge Club, we have the Athenaeum Club, various other gentlemen's club. These all emerge at this time. So these are closed membership only. So it attracts a different type of clientele. This became popular as opposed to the open egalitarian, sort of large, popular coffee house, coffee shop. We also then had the tea house expansion. Now, going right back to Garraway, as I showed you at the very beginning, 1657, they were selling tea at the beginning. But it wasn't popular. Coffee was what's important initially. The tea house then becomes important much later. Coffee was actually quite difficult to make. You had to roast it, you had to brew it, and you had to boil it. It was actually quite a lot of work. And they made the coffee in these huge pots, and then, as you said, you could have unlimited coffee all day. It was also quite unpleasant, apparently. It was very bitter, and they used to add some additional ingredients to make it more tasty, including, for example, mustard. They used to add mustard to the coffee. Tea was easy. Tea, you just add some hot water, and you could make tea very quickly. So the tea house becomes very important by the end of the 1700s. The coffee shop's been around for about 150 years. It's then overtaken by the tea house and by the larger social connection relationships that the tea house brings. Ladies can attend the tea house. They become larger family type events, larger, bigger social type circumstances and places where people would gather. So we have ladies and family adoption. There was also government policy. There was very little money in coffee because it was very competitive. The government couldn't tax it, couldn't make too much money. It could make money on tea. So the government also wanted to promote tea and then tax it as an important source of government revenue, which, as we all know, partly then leads to the American Revolution with the Boston Tea Party and throwing the tea out in the ships in Boston Harbor in opposition to the high taxes that were imposed by the King George at that time. And this is actually what caused the American Revolution. So that's also an element, background aspect to this in terms of the evolution and then subsequent decline of the tea house. And as an important part of that, you also have the power of companies like the East India Company, which is initially a tea trading company, which then becomes very large and very powerful and takes over large parts of Southeast Asia, including India. So it becomes a very important political and military organization and operation as well. So all of these factors contribute to the decline of the tea house, but it's the coffee house and then its replacement by the tea house. But the coffee shop was very important in terms of history, especially in terms of financial market growth in history, and it will always remain so going forward. What's the future? The future could be, for example, online coffee shops, online coffee houses, where we realise all of the earlier benefits in terms of the culture, courtesy, good manners that apply, as well as this ability to collect and exchange information. All of that we can reproduce again in modern digital types of coffee shop and coffee house going forward. So this was a key, very important, significant social, political, and certainly business and ultimately financial event, institution, which leads us specifically, as we've mentioned, to the development of some of the largest markets in the world. Coffee has declined slightly. Coffee house has declined slightly as against tea shops, but still coffee houses remain very important across the world at this time.